This episode of Feminist Frequencies discusses themes such as suicide and violence, which some audiences may be sensitive to. So keep that in mind before you start this episode of Feminist Frequencies. You're listening to Feminist Frequencies. Last week, we talked about Becky Phillips and her involvement with WHER, the first all-women station in 1955 in Memphis, Tennessee, and how her relationship to her husband, Sam Phillips, contributed to the creation of the station as well as to the careers of other women in broadcast for years to come. This week, we're talking about Maxanne Sartori, one of the first female broadcasters at WBCN in Boston, Massachusetts. Before we talk about Maxanne, it's important to talk about WBCN and what this station sort of stood for, as well as an important man in this equation. Bill Lichtenstein was a 14-year-old intern at WBCN, but that's not where he's important in this context. See, the other thing that Bill Lichtenstein did was that later on in his life, he directed, edited, and produced a documentary called WBCN and the American Revolution. WBCN and the American Revolution is a PBS documentary that is also available on Amazon Video. And it's about 2 hours long, but it covers the journey of WBCN from the late 1960s all the way through the 1970s. Here's the thing about WBCN. This was a time where a majority of radio hosts were men, where a majority of radio was talk radio, or they would play the same songs over and over again, and it was highly commercialized. WBCN changed the game here, where they sort of mixed things up a little bit and were generally considered more edgy or alternative because the station didn't conform to previous standards. They didn't always even conform to FCC standards, the standards that the Federal Communications Commission sets. They would often air things that were controversial and they maybe shouldn't have because things were happening that they wanted to broadcast that they thought needed to be broadcast that wouldn't necessarily have been appropriate to put on air, but they decided to make that decision anyways, despite the fact that many of the broadcasters could have lost their jobs. That being said, that was sort of what made WBCN what it was. It was highly political, and it also had a massive impact on culture as a whole. They were active during the Vietnam War, and when people were protesting the Vietnam War, they broadcasted the assassinations of Martin Luther King Jr. and President John F. Kennedy. They were around when Nixon resigned from office. They were sort of progressive for their time period for the way that they were critical, but covered the issues that mattered in their time periods, despite the fact that it wasn't necessarily the most popular thing to do. They were also highly influential on LGBTQ plus issues. Because Stonewall also would have happened in this time period, gay rights were starting to become more publicized. This led to the station having what was called the Lavender Hour, which was hosted by two gay men, one of which was featured in WBCN and the American Revolution. They would go on to talk to artists like David Bowie, and they covered the first Pride Parade in New York City. The station also had a call-in line that the documentary compared to what we would consider in the modern day Siri, where listeners could call in and not necessarily recommend songs or ask for the station to play songs, but to ask general questions. They even started a lost pet program where listeners would call in, ask if anybody had seen a dog or a cat, or would help animals to get adopted. The darker side to this was that people would call in and use this call line as a suicide hotline. And the operators would talk people down and make them reconsider because human life is that valuable, and the operators understood this and would not turn these people away, instead choosing to keep them on the line. I think that was what made WBCN as influential as it was, is they understood that they had a voice and people understood that they would be heard through WBCN in any way that they called in. In fact, that was what drove the increase in diversity at the station, both with people of color and with women. Another man involved with the station, Charles Laquidara, said something on air about chicks who could type volunteering for an organization that had reached out to WBCN. So, the next morning, women showed up at the station with a box of baby chickens and dumped them on someone's desk and basically said, "These are chicks. We're not." And demanded that women have at least an hour on the air, which led to the first women being hired at WBCN, one of the first of whom being Maxanne Sartori. Maxanne's story doesn't actually start in Boston. It doesn't even start in Massachusetts. It starts on the other side of the country, in Seattle, Washington. In her late teens and early 20s, Maxanne had been broadcasting with KLOL-FM, but then got a call when she was 20 to come broadcast for WBCN. She was, again, very young, even when she was pulled across the country. But how young she was probably the thing that actually made her stand out. She was very passionate and very distinctive, and she was particularly excited about music. And even her coworkers would describe her as very bright and energetic and not afraid to play music that nobody knew about yet, which is sort of the direction that the rest of her years at WBCN went in. This week on Feminist Frequencies, we're talking about Maxanne Sartori, who in her early 20s started as a broadcaster at KLOL in Washington before moving on to Boston to work with WBCN. Keep listening to Feminist Frequencies for more. When Maxanne started broadcasting with WBCN when she was in her 20s, she was still very young, again, in her early 20s, but it's very likely that this worked in her favor at the time. See, it was still revolutionary to have a woman on air, and as I've mentioned before throughout the course of the show, women's voices haven't always been the most popular. In fact, that's something that they tackle in WBCN and the American Revolution, because another radio host was criticizing what women's voices sounded like on air, saying that basically the higher pitched voices weren't the thing that people wanted to listen to on air. But Maxanne would have proved that wrong, because people did like to listen to her. She had a very distinctive voice and an energy that drew people in and made them want to listen. And not only did they want to listen to her, but they also wanted to talk to her. This was particularly important when it came to musicians coming into the studio and wanting to interact with her. You'll notice that a lot of her work in broadcast revolves around the music industry rather than just standard broadcast. And that's because that's sort of what her career became. That was a majority of what she did at the station, was helping to promote musicians and helping them to get their start on the air. This was another thing that her colleagues recognized about her, is she loved music and she didn't like music that they expected women to like. She liked harder music. She liked more intense music, and she used that to her advantage, as well as letting that drive her to play some of this more intense music on WBCN. One of the songs that she played over and over again was Dream On by Aerosmith. Aerosmith would not have been popular in these days, just starting out and not necessarily being popular, because people compared them to the Rolling Stones more often than not, rather than letting them have their own identity. But she loved them. So she would play Dream On over and over and over again until eventually the band really took off from there. She did this again with another song as well, My Best Friend's Girl by The Cars. They even credited her and stayed close with her throughout her life because of the impact that she had on their careers by playing this song over and over and over again on WBCN. She would do this with other bands as well, playing Queen on an unmarked vinyl with the Cars. She would have been playing on a cassette tape, but with an unmarked vinyl and sort of helping to promote them more in the US. She would also go on to promote other bands as well, including the Jay Giles Band, of whom, interestingly enough, Peter Wolf, a member of the Jay Giles Band, was also a part of WBCN, as well as Billy Squire, who she claimed to have dated in an interview with Larry Katz. There were other bands mixed in here as well, but it's also important to mention that she would have bands come on the air with her at WBCN, notably Bruce Springsteen in the E Street Band. Bruce Springsteen actually dropped into the studio with her and played a performance on the air while he was in Boston performing. So he had that sort of airtime and that experience with her to help get his music more out on the air. And you can hear a part of that broadcast in the documentary that I've referenced a couple of times. And it's genuinely, it's a lot of fun. They sound like they're having a lot of fun and they give a great performance as a part of it too. But all of this and the music that she promoted and played contributed to the image that she had with WBCN and the impact that it had culturally in a time where they were also having an impact politically with the diversity of the station, as well as with the current events that were going on in the world at the time. Maxanne's last day at WBCN would be April 1st, 1977, which the anniversary of was just about a week ago from the time that this episode releases. She would not go on to continue in broadcast, instead going on to be a promoter for Island Records and then Elektra Asylum and then independently later on in her career. She would continue to stay close to some of the artists that she had on WBCN, including the Cars. Part of being one of the first women employed at WBCN meant that she opened the door for other female broadcasters at WBCN and in the wider industry as well. At WBCN specifically, this meant women like Debbie Allman, as well as others who featured in the documentary WBCN and the American Revolution. Also, she didn't just have an impact on broadcast, she also had an impact on the wider music industry as well. She was inducted into the Massachusetts Broadcasters Hall of Fame in 2018, and in a true act of poetry, the Cars were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame the same year after being discovered by Maxanne Sartori in the 1970s. Again, WBCN and the American Revolution was released in 2019, the documentary that was produced by Bill Lichtenstein, who was an intern at the station in his high school years, and there was also a companion book released after that as well. Next week on Feminist Frequencies, we'll be talking about Liz Kiley, who actually got her start in my home state of Michigan before moving on and working throughout the entire United States. So tune in next week to Feminist Frequencies. I'm Maggie Berner, signing off.